Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. And here is your host, Ryan Mack.
Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. Now, COVID-19 has become a prime mover for adopting contactless payments in the U.S. It's really heightened our awareness to avoid touching what we don't have to, and it's behavioral adoption that's really keeping us safe. Now, it's clear that consumers don't want to go back to how it was before, even after society normalizes post-pandemic. Now, this has opened the door for the adoption of contactless payments in the U.S., which has really lagged behind the rest of the world in adoption, as evidenced by new numbers that Visa and MasterCard has presented. Now, this episode is really going to take a look at the sea of change in American adoption for contactless payments and what that means for the future of payments and the world's largest market, and why Americans really are never going to turn back to the old way. So to help me on today's episode, I have Scott Johnson, who is the SVP at Galileo, and Sarah Grotta, who is the Director of the Debit and Alternative Products Advisory Service at Mercator Advisor Group. So there's certainly a lot to unpack during today's episode, so without any further delay, let's start the show. So Scott and Sarah, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode as we're taking a look at contactless payments. Now, Sarah, if I could start with you, I think we've got this great chart provided to us by Mercator Advisor Group that's taking a look at contactless payments. And so perhaps I was wondering if you could break this down for our audience and kind of really explain what it is that it means and some of the key takeaways that our audience should get from it.
Yeah, sure, Ryan. Happy to. Yeah, this is brand new data yet to be published, but this came from a survey that Mercator Advisory Group conducted with over 3,000 consumers in the U.S., and we asked them about their use of contactless payments, and specifically contactless debit cards. Now, this survey that we did was conducted in 2020, but it was completed before the pandemic began to really, you know, impact our lives and our buying habits. So bear that in mind. But at the time that the survey was taken, we found that 25% of consumers said that they had conducted a contactless payment with their debit card. Now, they're using a mix of contactless card transactions, and you'll see that as we break that out in the second pie chart to the right. They're also using mobile contactless payment apps, and we also see the same number of people that are using a combination of both cards and mobile apps both. And we note these as sort of the tap versus app usage. So I think what's going to be really interesting is when we get to conduct this survey again next year, you know, certainly we predict that these numbers are going to be really different. You know, first we have the impact of the fact that here in the U.S. we've got more issuers issuing contactless cards and more merchants are turning on the ability to accept contactless. And of course, the impact of the pandemic. You know, we've seen some survey data released by the global networks in the last couple of weeks demonstrating that the current environment that's been created by COVID-19 is really an instigator, if you will, to get consumers to change their payment habits. You know, typically consumers only change their payment habits really slowly, unless they find a real incentive, like a convenience or rewards or something like that. Now, during the pandemic, the idea of being able to make an in-person payment without touching the point-of-sale device really has a lot of appeal. You know, also with the pandemic, consumers are concentrating their in-person purchasing with stores designated as essential retailers. And that includes retailers like grocery, home improvement, pharmacies, and that's a category that already has contactless enabled by and large. And so I think that's helping to drive that consumer adoption. You know, a couple of points I wanted to highlight from that survey data from the networks. I saw that MasterCard stated that in the U.S., between February and March, contactless transactions grew twice as fast as non-contactless transactions in the grocery store and drugstore categories. Now, I'm sure that in part is due to the fact that contactless is starting from a low percentage of total transactions, but that does point to overall contactless growth. And I noted that Visa announced that the U.S. now has the most contactless cards of any market globally. So issuance of contactless has really been picking up recently and could be a competitive consideration for financial institutions who don't yet have contactless issuance on their roadmap.
Excellent, Sarah. Thank you so much for that. You know, and I certainly think it's very interesting to kind of point out in terms of that the charts that we're looking at is really U.S. focused. And now, Scott, though, from Galileo's perspective, I know that they're a global organization and that they have access to kind of global data here. So one, I was hoping that perhaps you could kind of give us your take on the U.S. market. But then also if we could also shift gears into the Latin American market, which I think is an extremely interesting market, especially when it comes to contactless, and kind of give us your bird's eye view of what it is that you're seeing between these two markets, because I kind of feel, given that the COVID-19 environment, we're kind of almost setting the bar a little bit higher for everybody in terms of just that this isn't kind of a geographical situation where, okay, the U.S. market is doing one thing and Latin America is doing the other, where COVID's kind of really put that, hey, I don't want to, you know, physically touch things, and kind of increasing the incentive for contactless here. But I'm really curious to get your thoughts on those two separate markets.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. So I think that what we're seeing now is a broader trend, certainly leading before COVID. With the growth in fintech, we're seeing an incredible amount of new, you know, fantastic program managers that have entered the space that are offering these great mobile wallets and great product offerings. So we were starting to see a pickup in contactless before COVID hit. Now, what's been interesting now is we see, you know, across our platform with the programs that we work with, now we've got this great technology. We've got the ability for having not just mobile wallet transactions, but contactless, you know, physical cards like Sarah was talking about earlier. Now we're seeing we've got the technology in place. We're seeing now with COVID, we have this unbelievable pandemic, and we have this catalyst that's now really driven both of these technology innovations and the pandemic to really drive these contactless transactions. In the U.S., as we know, we have been lagging behind other areas of the world, you know, Europe in particular. You know, when you travel to Europe, as I did last year a couple of times to various conferences, you know, contactless is really, you know, 60-70% penetration, and in some areas as high as 80% penetration in those marketplaces. What's been interesting for us on our platform is to see the European program managers that have come to the U.S. have demanded that we enable, you know, contactless across not just our platform, but really the ecosystem in the U.S. to be able to manufacture all of those types of EMV chips. So we saw that growing going into this pandemic. Now we're seeing, I think, the consumer need to follow that as well. And so we're seeing that really pick up here in the U.S. Now what's fascinating is to then look at the other areas of the world that we service across our platform. So as you look at Latin and South America, a very interesting phenomenon is going on in those marketplaces as well. So what we're starting to see in Latin America and South America is now, again, broader acceptance of fintech as a whole, so that there's more and more program managers, there's more offerings out there for people to get, you know, great access to mobile wallets and those types of programs. We're also then seeing the associations are mandating more and more contactless certifications. And then clearly, with the pandemic, we're starting to see growth in those areas as well. So we're seeing, you know, what we believe is even after the pandemic, we believe that we're going to continue to see, you know, growth in contactless, because once people start to see the convenience factor, also just the security factor of, I don't see a return to cash after the pandemic. I think people are going to start looking at this saying, I just like the way I'm able to do that transaction more. And I think we're going to see that in the U.S. But even then, more broadly, as people move away from cash in Latin America, right now in a lot of these countries in Latin America, it's hard to even believe this stat. But as you look at what's going on in Mexico, as an example, 85-90% of transactions are still cash. So as you think about that one stat in particular, I think that we're going to continue to see this growth because we've got the technology to support it.
Wow. I honestly, my jaw's open here in terms of just that cash stat. I wouldn't have thought that, just given that, especially when you kind of take a look at just the number of fintechs and everything that are kind of springing up all over Latin America, that you'd really see just kind of that high cash rate usage in Mexico in particular. But kind of pulling back to just the whole contactless, you know, Sarah had brought up in terms of just the announcements that the major networks have issued in terms of Visa and MasterCard around contactless. But I'd like to, Scott, if we could dive a little bit deeper in, because I know Galileo has some great data, and obviously you're able to kind of see that from a contactless perspective, and kind of give us really your take. I mean, are you really kind of seeing, and I think so, kind of mirroring what Visa and MasterCard are saying from their perspective of what they're seeing in contactless, and maybe kind of relate that to a global scale, not just the U.S. of what we're seeing?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's a couple of reasons, you know, as you look at why we believe, you know, and can echo what we're seeing from Visa and MasterCard. There are a couple of areas, you know, on our platform that we see that support contactless. One of the things that's just really grown astronomically over the last kind of 6 to 12 months is the ability to push provision a card in real time directly to a wallet. So what that does now, and where we're able to see this again more broadly, is if you're able to create an account on the Galileo system and push provision that, you know, within a few seconds to your Apple Pay or Google Pay or Samsung Pay wallet. Now what we've got is this technology that enables a contactless payment. So while we certainly support, you know, contactless cards, which is great, and that's another option, and that's fantastic to do contactless payments. What we're seeing now is being able to support push provisioning directly to a wallet, you know, in the U.S. And this is why I think that because we've got so many fintech program managers now that are starting to get some broader scale in the marketplace, and they're able to take advantage of the technology that we have on our platforms, on our platform. Now you're able to see that they can get a contactless payment mechanism directly into a wallet. I can go out and make a purchase. And because they've got the scale that a lot of these card program managers have across our platform now, you're starting to see that's, I think, making a big impact as far as the actual numbers of transactions that are being done that are contactless payments. And we see that again, not just in the U.S., but again, in Latin and South America. What's fascinating about those markets, like we're talking about the cash aspect, also if you look at Latin and South America and you look at just the demographics of those countries, right? So many of those countries have their population skews to a younger demographic. So the other big reason why I think contactless is going to continue to grow in Latin and South America is just demographics. You've got, you know, a younger generation that's going to be more comfortable with mobile phones. They're more, you know, they're not that they won't, not that an older generation doesn't learn that and doesn't do that. But I think as you really think about, you know, taking cash out of the system, I think over the next couple of years, you're going to see more and more of these mobile wallet programs in Latin South America. I know on our platform in particular, the number of companies in Latin and South America that are reaching out to us for support of mobile wallet programs and contactless programs is truly grown through the roof. So I think as you look at those areas and you package all of that together with the technology, that's why you're going to see, because of COVID-19, people want to do these transactions, and we believe that they'll continue to do those after the pandemic.
I love the idea of the push provisioning. I mean, just think about the convenience associated with that. And you know, thinking what's been going on with COVID-19 and, you know, government entities and organizations that are trying to get financial benefits to individuals. Do you think some of these wallets have a place to play in that space as well?
Yeah, I do. I think that as you look at the way that governments are looking at all sorts of aspects of how they're trying to, you know, combat what's going on with COVID-19. I think having them play a broader role in the payment, you know, in pushing out of payment technologies, right? So we all know as we're learning and evolving with COVID-19, you know, just the simple fact of being able to, you know, maintain, you know, your social distance, you're not having to hand cash right to a clerk across the counter from you, where you're able to, you know, maintain this better social distance, you're not touching cash. I think that governments should absolutely, as they look at this, that's one area that we can just take out of what I'll call the COVID-19 threat matrix, right? If you can just eliminate, you know, that area alone, I think that governments should be looking at this again, and not just in the U.S., but again, as we know, with this being a global pandemic, that you know, areas that where we focus, Latin America, South America, certainly Asia Pacific, North America, where we're keenly focused right now. I think governments across those regions should look at this as a way for eliminating at least that part of a threat matrix, and should really get involved in trying to push anything contactless, whether that be on the merchant and acquiring side, to do everything we can to incent merchants to adopt, you know, those devices, as well as, again, what we've got built on the issuing processing side with being able to push provision to a wallet. There's no reason why someone can't, you know, create an account and get out in the marketplace and start doing contactless payments, you know, within seconds on our platform.
Yeah, I mean, think about that from just a consumer ends point standpoint, just from the government issue, because I know one of the things that's kind of going on in the news right now is just you have some Americans that are throwing away their stimulus prepaid card because they think it's a scam. And it's nothing against prepaid cards whatsoever. But I think it's just an interesting experience from that. If you can have that instant provisioning there, you have the mobile device that's able to capture so many different metrics, whether that be any type of biometrics and things like that to it. And it's able to collect all that data to be able to really reduce fraud down quite a bit, and being able to say, hey, I may not have the direct deposit, but when a stimulus check goes out, I'm able to receive that essentially in real time for it, just because I can provision that directly into my phone and I can instantly start using it. I mean, from a user experience, and you also think from a fraud experience, you think that that would have to kind of be superior to just, you know, mailing out all of these individual cards or mailing out all these individual checks.
Yeah, Ryan, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, as you look at this, you think of kind of some of those key areas that we can solve on our platform. So for example, you can real-time fund accounts into our platform and into an account. So now you're not waiting for the delays of you know, potentially getting a prepaid card in the mail. The fraud aspect of this. So again, the beauty of having a mobile wallet on your phone is now you're just eliminating these just opportunities to introduce, you know, potential fraud, you know, threats or vectors into the process. So as you look at all of those different areas, I know that there are some people that have been very, very concerned about, hey, I got this card in the mail, I don't want to use it. But if we can kind of look at this differently and solve some of that and say, listen, people are very comfortable with their phone. If with push provisioning, being able to fund real time into those accounts and then being able to go out and make those transactions, I think those are the areas that as you look at ways to solve some of the challenges that we've seen in getting funds into people's hands, you know, with the pandemic, who knows how many other stimulus packages might come down the pipeline. These are the types of things that we have, you know, the technology that can solve so many of those problems and really, you know, eliminate, you know, again, as you look at on the fraud side, imagine it if you could virtually almost eliminate some of the fraud on this by using push provisioning and a contactless payment. It makes it that much more effective for the government to be able to do these types of incentives in the future as well.
Yeah, and I know that this is going on a little bit of a tangent here, but also when it relates to insurance payments, right? Because when we're talking about kind of pandemics and things like that, yes, obviously the one that's going on right now being COVID-19, but in the U.S. you still have hurricane, earthquakes, floods, all that stuff, and kind of the real-time funding and that push provisioning really kind of helps when it comes to insurance payments, who's, you know, somebody's house who may have caught on fire and destroyed and they need funds instantly. So that's certainly another interesting take, not just from a government issue stimulus check, but kind of a what I would call, and I'm using air quotes here, something of a bit of a normal payment in terms of, hey, I need this now type of a thing. So certainly extremely interesting on that real-time funding and push provisioning on that. But now I'd kind of like to take a little bit of, and I think we kind of discussed this a little bit here, but I really want to dive into this and kind of, I guess we'll put a thinking caps on, if you will, here, and kind of look into that crystal ball, if we will, and kind of, Scott, from your perspective, what is it that you think that you see really ahead for contactless? I know you had mentioned in terms of just saying, hey, I don't think that we're going back to a predominantly cash-based society here. But really, what do you kind of see as the if we could call it kind of contactless 2.0, if you would?
Yeah, I think with contactless 2.0, I think because of these technologies, I think because of the more wide adoption and usage because of COVID-19, I don't see us going back to kind of having a little bit of a regression after the pandemic. I think with contactless now, we're getting a broader adoption. People are getting more comfortable with that as a payment mechanism. And I feel like now, because of all of these pieces of the infrastructure that are going to be in place more and more, again, I'll go back and reference, you know, what you see happening in Europe. Europe has typically been a few years ahead of the US and in North America in payment acceptance. And again, I look at that and you see how quickly and how easy it is to do a contactless payment compared to, you know, a full contact, or heaven forbid, going back to a magstripe, or even then really, really bad going back to a cash transaction. I just don't think that we're going to see that as much. I think people are going to look at this to say, it's a safer way for me to do a transaction. It's an easier way for me to do a transaction. I've got a comfort level that when I'm going in and tapping, you know, on a device, that transaction is going to execute. And I've got a great way to do that either with, again, a contactless card, if I want to have that as physical plastic, or again, with being able to push provision to a wallet right away and adding a card program into a wallet. I just think that what you're going to see now is more and more people will get comfortable with that. And as it gets broader acceptance, you'll just continue to see it to grow. So we really believe that you're going to continue to see a reasonable growth rate going forward, you know, in contactless, you know, as part of what I will call contactless 2.0 in the future.
You know, I noticed in Europe, and I believe in other regions around the world as well, the cap on contactless was raised up. Do you think that stays in place long term?
I do. I think that once you've moved some of those rates on contactless, I don't know that you'll see those necessarily going back down. I think that we saw that, you know, in kind of the early stages of payments as far as floor limits, you know, way back in the day, as far as, you know, with magstripe only transactions as well. So I think that what you'll see is over time, you know, again, you won't see that there's a big increase in the basis points of fraud as far as, you know, any limit changes on contactless. We certainly have seen that so far on our platform, that we have not seen a spike in fraud on contactless payments by any stretch of the imagination. So I think that because now you're going to see more and more of these contactless transactions, those limits have come up. And again, that's just another benefit for why I think contactless will continue to grow, because now as those limits have come up, more consumers are comfortable using it for larger ticket transactions. Merchants are more comfortable with accepting it, you know, for larger ticket transactions. So I do think you'll see those rates stay up from where they were set previously.
So Scott, you know, you bring up in terms of just, okay, over in Europe, obviously that they usually are typically ahead of the U.S. by a couple of years when it just kind of comes to payment technology and adoption for that. But one of the things, though, that I'm kind of taking a look at is that obviously, so Europe has had EMV implemented for quite some time. And obviously the U.S. and especially at the pumps are still waiting on that kind of that full conversion that we're talking about here. So from a consumer behavior and kind of usage standpoint, U.S. consumers were really kind of asked to, okay, first it was a swipe, then people really had to get used to that dip, and now we're going to a tap. Do you feel kind of that quick transition is part of the reason why the U.S. has been a little bit slower in terms of just overall contactless adoption, because consumers might be a little bit confused of, okay, I was asked to swipe and then it changed to a dip and I just got used to the dip and now people are asking me to tap? Or do you feel that COVID has kind of really kind of erased that learning experience or that educational need experience in terms of customers just saying, hey, I'm going to do this, even though I may still sometimes try to insert on it there just because of the whole COVID-19 situation that we have?
Yeah, I feel like with the swipe, dip, tap, I'm learning a new dance move there. First you swipe, then you dip, and then you tap. So it does feel a little bit like that on my side. I think you're right. I mean, I think that in the U.S., as you look at it, I just kind of think of all the consumer behavior that we saw when we went from just magstripe to EMV. And that has not been that many years that you looked at it. It's like, oh my gosh. And it was always interesting for me just anecdotally to watch someone go to a point of sale and they're like, okay, you can almost tell they're doing their first EMV transaction. They're like, wow, it worked. Wow, that was pretty amazing. So what I find is interesting now is to see, it's almost like on the occasional transaction, if I'm doing a contact transaction where I have to actually swipe my card, it's like, it's almost now, I think we've gotten to that point where it's like, that feels almost a little uncomfortable to do a magstripe transaction. So I think that as you look at it, yes, it has been a little challenging for consumer adoption in the U.S. to go from Magstripe to EMV. But I think most people are, you know, kind of are getting more, they're really kind of there on the EMV side. I do think because of COVID, the kind of going back to the three dance steps now to actually tap, I think that is because of COVID, you know, in all interactions in our society. And even if you want to compare it to shaking hands and things that people are just saying, wait, maybe that just doesn't make sense. COVID has absolutely sped up that last of the three dance steps. Tapping now, I think for people are there saying, you know, I get that. I can tap on these terminals. There's more and more ability to say, yep, I'm comfortable with that transaction. So yes, I think that, you know, those you're going to see this last step. It's going to be sped up substantially for people because of COVID-19. And once they get comfortable with these transactions, you'll look at it and say, yep, there's no reason to do a full contact transaction.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Scott and Sarah, for taking the time today for speaking to me about contactless payments. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan.